As the attack took place, Mr. Bush was on his way to an elementary school in Florida. When informed of the first plane hitting the World Trade Center, where terrorists had struck just 8 years prior, Mr. Bush decided to go ahead with his photo opportunity. When the second plane hit the tower, his chief of staff entered the classroom and told Mr. Bush, "The nation is under attack." Not knowing what to do, with no one telling him what to do, and no Secret Service rushing in to take him to safety, Mr. Bush just sat there and continued to read My Pet Goat with the children. Nearly 7 minutes passed with nobody doing anything. As Bush sat in that Florida classroom, was he wondering if maybe he should have shown up to work more often? Should he have held at least one meeting since taking office to discuss the threat of terrorism with his head of counterterrorism? Or maybe Mr. Bush was wondering why he had cut terrorism funding from the FBI. Or perhaps he just should have read the security briefing that was given to him on August 6, 2001, which said that Osama bin Laden was planning to attack America by hijacking airplanes. But maybe he wasn't worried about the terrorist threat because the title of the report was too vague.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
A report like that might make some men jump, but as in days past, George W. just went fishing. As the minutes went by, George Bush continued to sit in the classroom. Was he thinking, "I've been hanging out with the wrong crowd"?
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to a bonus episode. Just when you thought 9/11 was over. You probably thought, Isaac, you talked about 9/11 for 4 hours on this podcast. You talked about it for probably 3 or 4 hours on Breaking Social Norms with your lovely wife, Josie. And I'm here to tell you, you're getting another hour, whether you like it or not. You know, it's the biggest false flag of all time. Well, I don't know that. I shouldn't say that. I don't know that, right? Could be real, probably isn't. But today we're going to cover, this is a bonus episode for my supporters. You support me and I'm going to give back to you what I can. You already get the ad-free stuff. You already, depending on which platform you went with, you got some free books. You get some early access and you get bonus content. And this is some bonus content for you. More 9/11 nonsense. I'm going to do a reading of the pet goat. I am going to be George Bush today. I've been initiated. They put me in a coffin. I am now a member of the Skull and Bones. My daddy was a CIA agent. And I'm going to read to you the pet goat in true ritualistic fashion. But before we do that, we're going to talk about it. Infamously, this was the book President George Bush read in 2001 on September 11th in Sarasota, Florida, at the elementary school, while the 9/11 attacks were happening on American soil. This is when the guy whispered in his ear that, "Hey, I know you're reading this goat book right now, but America's under attack." Because Flight 175 smashed into the South Tower of the World Trade Center. Flight 77 previously hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center. So this one made it official. First one was, get ready for more. than we got more. Now, if you recall, if you listened to all four episodes of the 9/11 conspiracy theories, you recall that we compared through gematria, numerology, twilight language, whatever you want to call it, the synchronicities maybe, the connections these flights had with Aleister Crowley. Because we read through S.K. Bain's book, 9/11 as a Mass Ritual, which, again, is the reason that we're doing this show today. I recommended that book, and I still do. It's pretty good. You're going to like it. It goes deep, homeboy. But they said that Aleister Crowley's... So Aleister Crowley wrote a million books. Some of them were a page long. Some of them were longer. Liber 77, Liber Oz, was one such book. It had the manifesto of his religion, Thelema. His religion, Thelema, as you already know, I'm sure, was based upon this instructional dictation whispering from this entity he called AWAS, that he later identified as Lucifer, as the devil. I believe that was in Magic and Theory and Practice, or Confessions, I don't remember. His books are hard to read. I've never read one cover to cover. Because he was a poet, right? He was a poet, and he knew it. So he wrote real flowery stuff, and then you mix in the occult stuff, and oh my goodness, very difficult to read some of these books. They're easier to read than Dion Fortune's Mystical Kabbalah, though, I'll give you that. So anyway, book 77 was also called the Book of the Goat. And you can see how all these things connect in. We talked about the number of magic being 11. And he said the most powerful number was 11 times 7. 77. That's why Liber 77, Liber Oz, connects into Flight 77. The first plane, the commencement of the ritual, of the magic ritual, on a global scale. Then Liber 175 corresponds to Flight 175. This is the one that they whispered into George Bush's ear. It has begun. And Liber 175, as we discussed, was the one with the instructions on how to evoke entities, how to make contact, how to summon these beings energetically through magic ritual. Because again, the idea presented over these many hours of discussion are that 9/11 was a massive magic ritual, and it represented the opening of the ceremonial chamber, the lifting of the veil of Isis. All will be revealed in due time, my friends. That's how they looked at it. They knew with the power of the internet and technology that transhumanism would find its way. They needed to accelerate things. So they did it. And that's the argument presented. Now, Michael Moore, in his documentary Fahrenheit 9/11, mistakenly called this my pet goat, but it's called the pet goat. And we're going to read it to you. Let me hit you with some more info, because it ain't that long. I know you're probably thinking, like, I don't want to hear a kid's book, Isaac. Trust me, I don't want to read it either. But it's like two pages. It's like nothing. I thought it was going to be this big, long book, the way they kept saying, like, oh, the president sat there for 7 minutes as they read Pet Goat. Really? But we're going to time it. I'm going to read it to you, and we're going to time it and see if it's really 7 minutes. I read it in what felt like a minute. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe it's 7 minutes. Anyhow, supposedly, the reason, and this is from Wikipedia, the reason that George Bush sat there silent and motionless was because Ari Fleischer told him via a cue card not to say anything. In the 9/11 show, we're talking about the third show, which was the first part of the book club for S.K. Bain's book. we talked about in chapter 4, it's called The Pet Goat is the chapter. And that's where he talks about all of this stuff that we're going to talk about today. The claim, ultimately, that he's making, which I kind of believe, is that the deity invoked using this mass ritual, using the numbers of Crowley's books, is, of course, the devil. The archetype being the goat. The Church of Satan uses the Baphomet goat as their logo. The black goat has been symbolic of the devil for many years. And that's the argument. And in fact, if you look at the... There's a famous picture that I think they call it the face of the devil, of smoke coming out from the tower that looks, sure enough, like a goat, like a black goat or devil face. Pretty creepy, really. But the goat is symbolic of Pan, represents the devil, otherwise known as the Baphomet, the goat of Mendes, ties into the Knights Templar, all these secret societies that claim they worship wisdom and enlightenment, but really they worship Lucifer. They worship Lucifer through the Prometheus archetype, the Prometheus being the one that gave man the knowledge, the divine fire, stealing from the gods, the oppressive gods. So man could ultimately create iPhones and a digital matrix and Facebook, which they want to get us into. The Baphomet symbolizes alchemical ideas of nature, combining male and female, light and dark, reconciliation of opposites, which is where you get into our discussion about the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and the Twin Pillars of Boaz and Jachin that we've discussed already. But in the book, in S.K. Bain's book, I got to clarify which book. I've got two books going on here. In S.K. Bain's book, he claims that the story, The Pet Goat, is about an overbearing, authoritarian father figure and a misbehaving goat, and the clash that exists between the two. The authoritarian father is like, no, you must worship me and do what I say. Follow my commandments. Right? Get it? Get it? Follow the commandments. And the goat's like, no, bro, I do what I want. I do what thou wilt. With the idea being that the goat eventually comes out as the savior. The goat, the Luciferian goat, sets man free from this authoritarian god. And I said, no way. That can't be what this book is about, can it? So I bought it. I bought the actual book. I'm going to read it to you right now. Are you ready? This might be a short show. This isn't going to take long to read. Let me talk about the book some more, as if you care. It's from 1995. It's called Reading Mastery 2, Storybook 1. It's a compilation book, folks. Compilation. There's a lot of stories in here. The one that I bought on Amazon, I don't know, was it $10? It was a library book. I've got the library stamp on the inside cover. No one took it out, though. And there's no one's signature on it. It does say Captain Cooper, Title 1, which I found curious. I was just reading about Robert Sullivan's book, Cinema Symbolism 3. He has a section on, well, he talks about The Exorcist and Captain Howdy. You know, Pazuzu, right? The other devil. All these devils all around us. Yeah, there's all these stories in here, like The Barking Shark. Jill Tried and Tried. Meet Spot. The Boy Who Asked Why. The Dog That Loves to Read, Read, Read. Oh, that one sounds fun. I might read that one. That one sounds funny. I didn't read any of these. Tim and His Hat. What is that about? Is that about a tinfoil hat? I don't know. Super Don? Is that about Donald Trump? It says that the story is broken up into two parts. The first part was Dan was sad. The second part is Don meets a woman. Oh, dear. You know what happens when Don meets a woman, right? He pays her off. No, I'm just kidding. I kid. I love my Trumper MAGAs. They got good intentions. Now, let's go to... It's on page 153. It's under a large... Okay. It's weird. They have a... It's these things are like 2 pages long, but they have sections. The full story that it's from, the umbrella, is the girl and her goat. And it's got two parts. The first part, the pet goat. The second part, the goat stops the robber. So we're going to open our books to page 153. Isn't this fun? You got to just listen to the full story, because it's hard to find this if you can believe that or not. It was actually a little bit more difficult than you would think to find a copy of this. But it was written in 1995. A guy named Siegfried Engelmann. I dug into the author a little bit. I didn't see anything obvious. Siegfried Engelmann. Just on Wikipedia, though, right? Wikipedia sometimes is shady business. Sometimes. What else is there? I'm trying to think of what else to... I want to give you at least a half hour here. Because I fear that when I read this, we're going to find out that this isn't that long of a read. And you're going to say, Isaac, you've stumbled upon a bigger conspiracy here. The bigger conspiracy is, this was not a 10-minute read. All right, that's it. That's all I got. Let's get into the book, and then we're going to hit you on the other side with in conclusion. All right, the pet goat. Here we go. I'm putting on my George Bush skull and bones casket. Here we go. So, okay, it's called The Pet Goat. A girl got a pet goat. She liked to go running with her pet goat. She played with her goat in the house. She played with her goat in her yard. But the goat did some things that made the girl's dad mad. The goat ate things. He ate cans and he ate canes. He ate pans and he ate pains. See how they had pan in there? They stuck it in there. He even ate capes and caps. One day her dad said, that goat must go. He eats too many things. There's your authoritarian, godlike dad. The girl said, Dad, if you let the goat stay with us, I will see that he stops eating all those things. Her dad said, we will try it. So the goat stayed, and the girl made him stop eating cans and canes and capes and caps. But one day, a car robber came to the girl's house. He saw a big red car near the house and said, I will steal that car. He ran to the car and started to open the door. The girl and the goat were playing in the backyard. They did not see the car robber. More to come. Here's for part two, The Goat Stops the Robber. A girl had a pet goat. They have to reinforce what they've already told you. A girl had a pet goat. Her dad had a red car. A car robber was going to steal her dad's car. The girl and her goat were playing in the backyard. Just then the goat stopped playing. He saw the robber. He bent his head down and started to run for the robber. The robber was bending over the seat of the car. Oh, goodness. The goat hit him with his sharp horns. The car robber went flying. The girl's dad ran out of the house. He grabbed the robber. You were trying to steal my car, he yelled. The girl said, but my goat stopped him. Yes, her dad said, that goat saved my car. The car robber said, something hit me when I was trying to steal that car. The girl said, my goat hit you. The girl hugged the goat. Her dad said, that goat can stay with us, and he can eat all the cans and canes and caps and capes he wants. The girl smiled. Her goat smiled. Her dad smiled. But the car robber did not smile. He said, I am sore. The end. So what I've done just now, my friends... Unless I'm reading the wrong book, that's possible. But that's not what it said online, trying to find a copy of this story. Is I read that whole book in 2 minutes with my child reading voice, even stopping to try to make you laugh a little bit. And we're told that George Bush read that book, or the George Bush sat there for 7 minutes while that story was read to the kids. fake news.
Is it fake news?
I don't know. I mean, something doesn't add up here. I just read that book in 2 minutes. There's only one picture, so it's not... Unless the other version of the book has got, like, a picture for every 2 sentences and they show the picture every 2 sentences. I don't know. I don't have kids. I don't know what it's like when you're reading books to kids. I could be way wrong with that assessment. But, yeah, so short. No way he read this for 7 minutes. No way. But, yeah, sure enough, more importantly, S.K. Bain was right. This is a story about, you know, Dad's a real jerk. He's just like a conformist. He's, no one will be doing the things that I don't want them to do. That goat's eating too many of my caps and capes and pans and papes. Pans and papes, I don't know. What did he say? Pains. What the hell's a pain? And she is kind of like, no, Dad, I love the goat. Then the goat saves Dad's 65 Chevelle. He was going to go get ice creams at the ice cream shop and pick up some chicks on the way, I guess. And he was like, you know what? That goat's all right. That goat is all right. Why didn't Dad lock the car? If it wasn't for you, there wouldn't be thieves in this world. That Full Metal Jacket. So, but yeah, the goat saves the day. I mean, that's what happens here. He saw the robber and he hit him with his horns. The goat stopped him. And the moral of the story is the goat saves the day. So yeah, S.K. Bain was right. Strange, huh? The goat is the destroyer of worlds because he's eating everything. He's eating up the whole place. Dad's losing his mind. The goat is a destroyer, but then he is praised by the Father, which is God, with his Ten Commandments and his rules. Everyone shouts, listen to me. He's the conformist. But it turns out the goat was right. So yeah, another point for S.K. Bain. And oh, by the way, on the cover, it says S.R.A. in block letters. S.R.A., what could that be? Well, according to the book, it's part of Macmillan McGraw-Hill. But according to me, it's a reference for satanic ritual abuse. That's what S.R.A. stands for when you research all this dark stuff that I do. Oh, you know what else we can talk about? Because I didn't get you to 30 yet. I told you that was going to be short. It was 2 minutes. Let's talk about Sarasota. Sarasota, Florida. This is where Bush read this book. I'm going to read to you from S.K. Bain first. This is what S.K. Bain did, a great sum up of his entire book midway through the book, which is a weird place to do it, but hey. President and Bonesman George W. Bush arrives at Booker Elementary School in Sarasota, Florida, the state which had given him the presidency in 2000, and where his brother Jeb is governor, and where the 9/11 ringleader and hijacker pilot of American Airlines 11, there's that number of magic, 11, Mohammed Atta had received part of his flight training. The commander-in-chief as high priest is in, quote, paradise, presiding over a black mass, complete with little black children chanting out the words of the pet goat, about which Osama bin Laden will later crack jokes on Al Jazeera, saying that Bush was more occupied with the goat and its budding than the planes and their budding of the skyscrapers. Invoking Baphomet, even as United Airlines Flight 175 slams into the South Tower, an act designed to invoke Aleister Crowley's Liber 175, the book of uniting to a particular deity by devotion. Now let's unpack this a little bit. When he's talking about the black mass, when you read Infernal Geometry and the Left-Hand Path, this other book I've been reading, talks about black mass is to lay bare the contradictions, oppressiveness, or absurdity of a particular attitude or belief system so that it can never again be seen with the same degree of reverence or respect by the participant. Think of it as a ritual technique for showing beyond a doubt that the emperor has no clothes. And then it later says, Black Mass is the inversion of the Catholic Mass. I think we see this play out in film. Oh, wait, no, that's my notes. Sorry. I typed all this up. Anyway, my notes. Black Mass is the inversion of the Catholic Mass. I think we see this play out in film and even the mainstream media when they show us things to make us change our view of organized religion. So, again, the idea I presented, the Black Mass, was to lay bare the contradictions and oppressiveness of a particular belief system. 9/11 happens, and they say, we'll never forget, the world changed that day, and blah, blah, blah. We also have the story of the pet goat about an oppressive father. It is almost literally a metaphor for Christ, for God, God the Father. Now, in S.K. Bain's book, he claims that Sarasota, he puts it in quotes, that it's paradise. And if you look that up, sure enough, that's the nickname for Sarasota, paradise. Also, home of Randy Savage, by the way. The great wrestler, the macho man Randy Savage, rest in peace. Now, another curiosity I found, looking up this stuff for this show, I didn't know how relevant it was to the conversation. I wasn't going to add it, but here we go. If you go to allaboutsarasota.com, I found this via Wikipedia. I read it on Wikipedia and I researched it, and this is where it goes. I'm going to read you about the elementary school Bush was at was called Emma E. Booker Elementary. And I'm going to read you from the website. Emma Edwina Booker is one of the most instrumental and memorable women in Sarasota history. Her legacy remains strong in the three schools in Sarasota County that are named after her. They include Emma E. Booker Elementary, Booker Middle, and Booker High School. Emma came to Sarasota in 1910 at a time when education for blacks in Sarasota was rare and at times non-existent. Does that read a little racist? Blacks? I don't know. That's what it says. I'm just reading you what it says. I feel like maybe like saying the term black people is okay. Like, I don't mind being called white. I'm clearly not white. I'm more pink or whatever. So like, I'm kind of okay with us sort of, even though race is a construct. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But like, the way they're like the blacks. I don't know. It feels racisty. I don't know. Am I crazy? Anyway, I'm just reading you what it says, okay? Don't shoot the messenger. Blacks in Sarasota were not permitted to attend formerly white schools such as Sarasota High School and Bay Haven and Southside Elementary. They were taught to read out of a very few old books. Usually family members and other members of the community would teach some of the students' lessons. When Emma E. Booker came along, she was very instrumental in renting a hall and starting Sarasota Grammar School so that black children would have a place to go to school. She became its first principal and taught several of the classes. In 1925, she led a procession of students and teachers from the old Knights of Pythias Hall to a new school built next to the railroad tracks at Lemon and 13th Street, now 7th Street, by the Rosenwald Fund. Oh, now, what are the Knights of Pythias? You look that up, and it's a secret society from Washington, D.C., no less. And they're still existent today. Numbers are much smaller than they were in the 1920s. Up to 50,000 members, but they're very Masonic-y. They believe in a supreme being. The story of Pythias, an ancient Greek story, is about some guys who followed Pythagoras. That's where they get their term, Knights of Pythias. And Pythagoras, of course, the first the creator of the first secret society. Because, you know, he went around synthesizing beliefs from Babylon and Greece and Egypt. Taught all these secret ideas, which, by the way, was very important in the order of nine angles. That's what they're talking about when they're talking about angles. They're talking about geometry. And Pythagoras, of course, plays quite the role in their weird belief system. Number mysticism, architecture, art, and all these, you know, mathematics, they say, is the universe's language, right? And that's where the idea comes from. Let me read you. I'm trying to pull up something here for you. This is again from Infernal Geometry in the Left-Hand Path. It says, the philosophy of Pythagoras of Samos has been profoundly influential on Western philosophy of the past 2,500 years. This philosophy, based primarily on the symbolism behind numbers as a means of comprehending the universe and the magician's place within it, provides a significant basis for the original conception of the ceremony of the nine angles. The idea of the fundamentally mathematical nature of the cosmos is further developed by the most important figure in the development of Western philosophy, Plato. Because you always find out there's some link to... I lost my train of thought. There's always a link to... Oh, Neoplatonism. Kabbalah, Neoplatonism, and Rosicrucians and all this stuff. You'll see that floating around a lot in when you look up occult ideas. But the Pythagoreans, they would obsess over angles and numbers and architecture, such as the pentagram, right? The Pentagon. So again, like, not a silver bullet here connecting this book to 9/11, but I mean, throw it in the blender with everything else. It does, in fact, in conclusion, tie us into this idea of destroying the world to facilitate a new one, which explains why they would do this. Because you would say, why would people want to kill a bunch of people and blow up buildings? And the argument presented is that it's a magic ritual. It has an energetic effect. It's like the cutting of the tape ceremony onto the new world, the new age, the new aeon. Aleister Crowley's Aeon of Horus. All these things. They're all connected. That's the argument. Do I believe it? Mostly. It's difficult, right? Like, it's hard to know the truth here. It seems crazy, right? On the surface, you say, this is crazy. Who believes this nonsense? But the more you look at it, the more it starts to make sense, which, again, maybe true, maybe not. I always say choose your own reality, because that's the world we live in today. And I want to thank you for choosing your reality to be listening to my nonsense. So thank you for your support. No matter which supporter platform you are on, I appreciate you. Shout out to all my people on Rockfin and Patreon or in the VIP section on IlluminatiWatch.com. Can't forget about the VIP section. But yeah, this has been another bonus show, another bonus episode. Just another way of me saying thanks for your support. You're very generous. You are what keeps this podcast going. Thank you very much. And until next time, stay woke.